This is an ABC podcast.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour with John Fain.
Welcome to a forum on today's Conversation Hour where you get to ask questions of two people who are here to discuss politics in the US of A. 1300-222-774 for a Planet America talkback forum. 1300-222-774. And I'll try and scan and then represent your texts on the text message service 0437-774-774. One of the hosts of Planet America, Chas Lucidello, comedian and part of the Chaser comedy team, is here in the studio with us. Good morning to you, Chas.
Hello there.
And Sarah James, multi-award-winning journalist, author and commentator, regularly on ABC News Breakfast, former foreign correspondent for NBC News, and now living here in regional Victoria, is our other expert on hand to answer your questions. Morning to you, Sarah.
Good morning. And I'm not nearly as funny as Chas, but I'll try and give a few details that'll add some context and insight.
Not today. Today I'm in geek mode.
Can you explain what on earth is going on back where you're from?
Oh, yeah, just nothing much. Nothing to see there. Really quiet, nothing happening. Yeah. Next. Was that the good context and insight you were looking for?
Unconvincing. A black lesbian's just been elected mayor of Chicago. The most machine-driven Republican or Democrat, machine-driven city in the US of all. And yet someone's broken through, smashed multiple ceilings in one go. You've got a 20-something-year-old novice just barnstorming across America, gathering support for a presidential bid, even though he's Beto O'Rourke. How old is he?
He's 37. 37. I think you're talking about Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Well, I'm coming to that. Beto O'Rourke is like, he seems like he's in his 20s to me, but he's actually, what, 30?
No, okay. he's 46, Beto O'Rourke. He
is.
He's got that charismatic, youthful glow.
He sure has.
And a punk rocker past.
And what I'm driving to is now you've got a gay mayor elected who says he's going to be a candidate for president. And yet you've got the antithesis to this. You've got Donald Trump in the White House. So what are we seeing? What is going on in the US of A?
The first thing I'd say is you are going to see in 2020 a huge change election. Now, whether or not that changes the person who's in the White House, that's what the election is all about. But we saw in the midterms in 2018 a robust response to this presidency. And you're seeing that in some of the candidates that you're talking about now and some of the elected officials.
So is this the backlash to Donald Trump?
Yeah, I think there's that. Absolutely. And it's kind of a coalescing around it's in the United States. Are you for him or are you against him? Now, those numbers are really solid. In other words, people have made up their mind about this president and they've decided that they either like him a lot. And, you know, I've spoken to Trump voters. They adore him. It's almost charismatic. It's this really strong response. But the people who are against him are equally fervent. The reality is they're trying to decide, who do we latch onto? Who's going to be the comet that takes us into the White House in 2020?
This is absolutely true what Sarah just said. In fact, Donald Trump is, if you look at his average poll versus his what they call standard deviation poll, which is the where most of his polls are gathered, he has the least spread in history, in the history of polling, as far as presidents go.
So it's a deeply polarizing body politics.
And it doesn't change. It's always, his approval is always at 43%, basically. I'll just to pick up on your question as well, when you're talking about Mayor Pete and the lesbian mayor in Chicago, that we shouldn't just brush past this. America and gay rights has progressed so rapidly in the last 10 years. Let's not forget, in 2012, Barack Obama hadn't yet come out in favor of gay marriage. That happened in 2012. And yet here we are, and he was far on the left, and here we are 7 years later, and Mayor Pete, not only if you look at the polls, do you have less than 25% of people, I mean people, not just Democrats, all people who say they have a problem with a gay president, but that's a very small number. But you've got more people who have a problem with the president over 70. The fact that Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden is over 70 polls poorer than the fact that Mayor Pete is gay, which is an amazing progress in just 7 years.
Can you not agree with each other, please?
I'll try to be more obnoxious.
But no, I don't want you to be more obnoxious. But just, I mean, one of the issues, and there's a vein of seriousness in what I just said there. One of the problems in trying to understand what's going on in the American body politic at the moment is that what's previously passed as informed commentary has turned out to get it so wrong.
Oh, spot on. Yeah.
You just agreed with it.
Yeah, no, I do because I'm agreeing that we did get it wrong. And I think, I hope and believe that we're a bit chastened by that. But the reality is, I think we have to, it's all in flux right now. So you're in that weird position of trying to give your sense of what it's going to be, but it is in flux. One of the reasons that I went over last November to Texas to check out the race between Beto O'Rourke, that contest, which was a Senate contest against Ted Cruz, who actually ultimately won, was because I wanted to feel it. I wanted to talk to Americans who were not in Washington, D.C.
Cut out the filters.
Correct. And hear what they had to say.
And really, what did you learn?
What came across to me is that Trump has a really good chance in 2020. That there's a real, these are quite seductive candidates for Democrats. I mean, they're looking at breaking down barriers and doing things that are new and not business as usual. And also to go to Mayor Pete, who's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. Of course, for our listeners, that's Mike Pence, Vice President Mike Pence country. It can be quite a conservative area. And here
religious.
He is. Correct. And he himself is religious, a person of faith, and has called out the vice president on that. And, he says, I'm married. I'm a person of faith. It's not a sin or a crime to be gay. But the point I'm making is you have to listen.
1300-222-774. 1300-222-774. Sarah James and Chas Licciardello are here, and we're trying to understand and answer your questions as well as receive your input to what's going on in the body politic of the United States of America. It's vital to the future security of the world, the economic security of our region, whether there's a looming trade war with China or other issues that affect us directly. What's going on in America has impact almost daily in our world here in Australia. 1300-222-774.
I'll give you some disagreement though, John. You want some disagreement before? I disagree that everyone got it wrong in 2016. And that I'd say that is part of the groupthink. The groupthink that happened before was that, well, Hillary's going to smash it in. And the groupthink afterwards was, well, everyone got it wrong. But if you actually look at Nate Silver, for instance, who is the prognosticator of prognosticators.
Well, he's an analyst of data. He's a former guest on this program who he says, I don't care about the commentariat.
Yeah.
I just look at the figures.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. If you look at him, on the day of the election, he gave Hillary Clinton a 67% or 68% chance of victory. Now, what that means is one out of three times, she's going to lose. And people just
But he gave Trump a lower chance of victory.
I know. But
he's not absolved.
I know,
he's not
but what
a
I'm
sage.
Saying is when you give someone a 67% chance of victory, that means one out of three occasions they are going to lose. But the problem is journalists don't do maths. And so they look at those numbers and they go, oh, Hillary's definitely going to win then. And so I would say, yes, it is true that the commentariat was overconfident, but I would say it's only because they don't understand mathematics. If you actually look at the maths, I thought that what happened was what was – But fell in the line of what was predicted. It was within the standard deviation of what you would expect to happen. Let's put it that way.
I don't even think it was just about the math. I think it was about the fact that people didn't feel comfortable saying that they wanted to vote for President Trump. And I think that some of the polls, because, we read them all, were wrong. I wrote a story for the ABC 6 months before the election saying we might need to get used to the title President Trump because I kept seeing my own Facebook page. I grew up in the American South and I was seeing plenty of support for President Trump. So, I certainly had my radar up. And yet I think that there was a trust issue. I think we just wanted to trust these other things. But I think we really, yeah.
But I was just going to say, let's not forget that if 70,000 people had voted differently, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 3 million and she would have won the Electoral College as well. And we would have a completely different conversation now. I think there's a lot of hindsight with journalism where people go, oh, well, that there was a slight difference there, so therefore everything is different. But I'm not sure that's the case.
You can go back to, you know, pregnant chads, I think they were called, weren't they, when we looked at the Florida vote.
Of course, yeah.
And
hanging chads.
Hanging chads, thank you. And all that stuff that swung and decided that George W. Bush won, and instead of Al Gore, and, you know, history swings on some of these contests. Just before we get to callers, lots of people calling in. I'll get to you in just a second. One more thing. The Economist last week had a really interesting piece about gerrymandering, and it is extraordinary. There are now local and grassroots measures to rein in some of the extraordinary excesses where, you know, there'll be a corridor one street wide to grab a neighbourhood of Republican voters and wheel them in to create a district almost in sometimes comical form in order to try and game the system. And now there's a recognition, it would seem, Sarah, in the US, that this has to stop.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, this is a huge issue. And the challenge in the United States is that this is a local and state issue that affects national races. So to give one example of what you're talking about, North Carolina has a dubious reputation on this particular one. I lived in North Carolina for a lot of years. I was actually born there. And they have created the people who are against all the gerrymandering that's going on, they have created, I think it's a 10K, but regardless, it's a gerrymandering run to emphasize the problem. So they basically drew the map, and you find that the map includes these really curious detours, in some cases of one house. And you think to yourself, oh my goodness, this is a Republican-dominated state house. I wonder if that might be a Democrat. Oh, sure enough, they are, because these things are knowable and findable. The problem.
So they
with
get
this,
all the Democrat votes, lump them into one district, and then all the other areas are carved up for
they Republicans. They just actually try to divide the Democrats so that they only have a few in Republican districts so that the Republicans can win more districts. That's and by the way, this is not a one-party problem.
No, no.
Democrats have been naughty at this in the past, too. So this, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around.
And then there's one example, I can't remember which state it is, where the Attorney General is actually in charge of both setting the boundaries and investigating whether they're fair.
If you're looking for some elements of unfairness in the American political system, it's, you know, it's vast. but what I would say is the challenge to this, John, is that you have to fight this out. You have to duke this out on a judicial level. In other words, this has to be fought through the courts. And the other thing that's happened is that in some of the cases where, in this case, Democrats won as the governor, they've actually gone and they've tried to strip each other of power. So if you've got a Democrat running, then the Republican-controlled House quickly works out so that the governor doesn't have as much power as he or she used to have. So there's a host of shenanigans that are going on in the U.S. right now.
Yeah, I would say on that note that people ask about differences between Australia and America, and I would say the two critical differences why America is like it is and why Australia is like it is number one, compulsory voting versus non-compulsory voting, but number two, that we have an AEC. We have a neutral body
who is in charge of the Electoral Commission.
Yeah, we have a neutral body who's in charge of elections. And nothing like that exists in America. And so everything is fought over.
And I'll give you, just before we get to calls, and I know I've said that before, but I am going to get to calls. But the other huge difference has to be said is the Fox News Network, surely.
You know, there's a lot of frustration with Fox right now. And indeed, some Democrats are saying they're not even going to appear on Fox because they're really troubled by it. Although Bernie Sanders
right now he's
has
on
said
air.
Has said yeah. Exactly yeah. Has said he absolutely will, that he wants to reach those voters and he wants to flip them.
1300 222 774. Marie in Melbourne is first up with Sarah James and Chas Licciardello in our special forum about the United States and their politics. Marie, good morning.
Good morning, John, and welcome to Sarah and to Chas.
Thank you.
I have a American Constitution question. If a president wants to go make a decision one way, and if it's to do with specifically with security, can he be overruled by either the intelligence agencies or whatever other powers there are? Can he be overruled and be told, no, you can't do that, and no, you will not say that?
I'll jump in there to begin.
No.
So Sarah summed it up. One of the very few powers that the president has exclusively is national security. That's an area where there's an exception in every single bill for national security. So just to make it clear, but the Constitution is very, very clear that national security is under the president's authority. Nothing to do with intelligence agencies. They can never overrule the president. Intelligence agencies work for the president. They are never boss. The question is, can the Congress overrule the president? And usually on national security, the answer is no.
The one other thing I would add is that the founders, the framers, tried to create an elastic document going back several hundred years. And obviously, there were many things that they couldn't begin to foresee. So constitutionally, they divided it into executive under the president, the legislative was Congress with the House and the Senate, and of course, judicial, with the top of that being the Supreme Court. They could never have imagined the Cold War, for example, nuclear considerations, the fact that the president has the nuclear football. That has increased, many think, the power of some of the security agencies. That was all stuff they couldn't possibly imagine. But I would say it was remarkable in that they foresaw quite a lot, and it still works reasonably well. But the final thing I'd say is this particular president seems to have created more powers under the executive, and that is something that is being watched by everyone in the U.S.
The other thing I'd add is if you're asking, can the president be a tyrant when it comes to national security? No, because there's two things that control them. First of all, while Congress can't control national security, Congress does have the power of the purse. So the Congress can defund the president if the president goes off the rails, number one. And number two, the courts can control the president. So even though the president has control of national security, there are certain processes they have to go through according to the Constitution. And if they don't, you can go to the Supreme Court and pull them up.
All righty, Marie.
Thank you. The reason why I asked the question is because President Trump sort of reneged on his knowledge about WikiLeaks. Mm-hmm. And I found that was raised a curiosity, even though I have family in America and I know how they think about all this stuff. But I was curious as to why all of a sudden he backtracked, and I wondered whether he was just told to, zip the lip and to be very conscious of what America's laws and things.
Don't know that President Trump takes too much notice, Marie, when people ask him to zip his lid. Text messages, does he automatically become the Republican nominee next time round because he's an incumbent president?
Technically not, but it's ridiculously difficult for anybody who's a sitting president. You really have to mess up. You'd face a challenge in the primaries. And the simple fact of the matter is, it's not going to happen. He will be the nominee for the Republicans.
There are actually states at the moment where the Republican parties are passing rules to not have a primary this particular election. So it'd be very difficult for him to get beaten in the primary.
Democrats should appear on Fox like cigarette packets should have warning labels.
That's a great idea.
Gerrymandering is a huge problem, but not as insidious as voter suppression, writes this texter, where there's huge numbers of people disenfranchised. Explain what that's about, please, either of you. Chaz.
Sure. Okay. Well, like I said before, there is no neutral body that runs elections. And what that means is in a particular state, the Attorney General, who is either a Democrat or a Republican, makes decisions about what happens during the election, and the Secretary of State as well, which is also Republican or Democrat. What that means is they choose the hours that the polls are open. They choose how much early voting there is. They choose who's on the roll. They choose all the... Or they choose how you have to register, what proof of identity you need to register, you need to show when you turn up at the poll. What do you need? A gun license? Do you need a university ID? What do you need to show when you vote? And if you are good at gaming the system, if you're a Republican, you can work out ways to exclude Democrat voters. And
they've passed laws that people who are convicted of what are very sometimes minor criminal offences lose their rights in the same way as here. You have to be convicted of a serious criminal offence, and a very serious one, to lose the right to vote, to be a felon tainted by blood, if we go back through the ancient lingo. But over there, they've excluded people for quite minor crimes who lose the right to vote.
And some states permanently, like Florida.
Well, that was interesting, because there was a contest on that in this last election. There was a referendum on the ballot, and that's going to be fascinating. Watch Florida this time. As we always know, going back to hanging chads, Florida is always a swing state. It's got a huge number of electoral votes, and it's always hotly contested by both candidates and can go either way. And there are a number of people, from memory, not quite a million, but a number of people who have been put back on the rolls in Florida.
After successfully challenging being excluded from the roll.
It was because of an amendment on the ballot that the voters voted for.
But just wait, they're not back yet.
No, they're not. So anyway, watch that space. And the last thing I'd say about voter suppression is it can be direct in terms of, you know, requirements that you have, and it can also be indirect. There were some maneuvers at the border in the 2018 race in Beto O'Rourke's home district, and he challenged whether or not that was to try to keep the Hispanic vote low. Mm-hmm. So it's this, again, it goes back to American history, and it's tricky.
We'll get to border challenges and the walls and all of those things, but there's still lots of people with questions, and Leon in Reservoir is one of them. Good morning to you.
Good morning, folks. I'd like to challenge the commentators not to call America a free democratic state, because they, as you have said yourselves, they go out of their way to limit who can vote. They have their election day during the weekday to prevent people from turning up to vote.
People who have to work, yeah.
Yeah, they have an electoral college, which is a total farce. And we got to stop calling it the most democratic country in the world, because it's not.
Aren't you judging them by our standards, Leon?
Bloody oath I am. I'm judging it by the standards of more democratic countries.
I definitely think that the United States is a robust democracy. I disagree with you there. But I think what is interesting is that it runs differently. And, I mean, you know, think about it. If voters wanted to say, we want, as in many states they have, we want extended voting hours, we want to do a different day, that's something that's up for debate. We saw in 2018 a whole new crop of characters come into, you know, Congress, all different kinds of people. So I think it's a robust democracy, but I think it's one that does operate differently from Australia with its parliamentary system and again, with compulsory voting and the like. And this is one thing I would say about the United States. It's constantly under evolution, or small r, revolution, and that's certainly happening now.
And it's not as if our system has covered itself in glory in the last few years either. Would that be a fair observation with our revolving door prime ministerships?
Well, look, that is true. There's nothing democratic about prime ministers being knifed away from the electorate's gaze. So, yeah, I would say that. But I think that, yeah, if you look at an American election, if you look at the actual ballot, they vote on 20 different things. It's not like
depends
us.
Depends on the state. Yeah, you can have a long ballot or a short ballot. I mean, we talk about the differences. That's number one.
Yeah.
50 different states, 50 different opinions about how to get it right. Wildly different geographic areas and histories. I remember talking to a pal of mine one time, and we talked about our fourth grade education. It was like we were from different countries. So, you know, it's vast, brawny, full of opinions and political disagreements, but I would say a pretty robust democracy, albeit one that, again, is in a period of evolution. And if there's one thing I'll say, after 2016, people are paying a heck of a lot more attention than they used to. And it got some people who were quite complacent, including young folks. I'm like, what are you doing? Why aren't you going to the polls? To wake up and realize, if you've got a democracy and you don't vote, you've cast your ballot and you may not like the results.
Yep. Dennis in Oakley. Hi, Dennis.
Good morning, John, Sarah and Cass.
Hey.
Hey there.
One thing to bear in mind, should Mr. Trump lose the next election, he can run for the presidency again. And what I'm actually saying to you is that he will be the leader in exile, the government in exile. He will hold his base. They won't go anywhere.
So if he loses 2020, you think he'd run in 2024?
He can. He legally can do that.
He'd be like, you know, 94 or something by then.
Well, that won't stop him. He wants to stay out of jail, John. He'll do anything to stay in power. But the Dream Team...
Why do you think he might go to jail, Dennis?
His business affairs. is business affairs.
Well, that's been the subject of the most thorough scrutiny imaginable for the last decade.
But it's not over. I mean, the Southern District of New York is continuing. You know, I think the caller is making an interesting point. Maggie Haberman of the New York Times tweeted, I don't even know, maybe it was a month or two ago, about there was a speculation that one of the reasons that Trump wanted to run again in 2020 was because of this very issue. I mean, I think it's more complex than that, but the reality is that
he wants to run again because he wants to cement his place in history.
I think that's who Trump is. Trump likes to have all the light on him. He likes to be not only in the room where it happens, he wants to be, you know, running everything. But that's
why
by
he
the
doesn't
way,
want Julian Assange out and about because he's competing with him.
By the way, I was just going to say, running for president takes a lot of ego. So, I mean, you know, there's that's just not brand new in America, may we say. But I think you're right that he is going to be, here's the key thing, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the United States for a long time. He's already changed things. He's already changed the conversation.
Is he preparing for a dynasty of Trumps, Chase?
Well, Donald Trump Jr. definitely has the bug. He definitely is interested in politics. There's no doubt about that. He speaks before Trump at all his rallies these days. He keeps the Twitter presence going.
He's being groomed.
He is being groomed. He is being groomed. And I would suspect that if Trump won the next election, one of the preeminent contenders in 2024 will be his son. Having said that, if he loses, I disagree with Dennis. I don't think he'd be back 4 years later, and neither will his son, because one of the harsh things about America is when you lose, people really turn against you fast. And my prediction is if Trump loses, every Republican will be hating him two minutes after the election is over, just like with George W. Bush.
Dennis?
But we'll see.
Can I offer something else?
Sure.
All right. The dream team for me, for the Democrats, is Michelle Obama and Mayor Pete. I think Michelle Obama will come late because the Democrats can't sort themselves out. The Sandinistas are running a campaign at the moment, Bernie only. And this will be very costly for the Democrats.
Now, Michelle Obama is on a book tour at the moment and was mobbed in London, I think, just overnight when she was doing an appearance. But you seriously think she'll be changing her mind, having previously ruled it out emphatically? You think she'll succumb?
Yes.
Okay. Either of you?
I disagree. I think she's not. I don't think that's her thing. I don't think she wants to run for president. I think that the Democrats are going
like
to have
Hillary
to do.
Hillary running after Bill had been president.
Well, I think it's. I think she's more beloved than Hillary Clinton was for, you know, that's complex territory. But the reality I would say is that the Democrats are going to have to do the hard yards of taking a large crop of candidates, winnowing it down and figuring out who their best candidate is and their best shot is to defeat Donald Trump. And that's going to be a matter of character and geography. And they're going to need to look at both.
27 minutes to 12 on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, digital radio and screaming on the internet at abc.net.au/Melbourne. I have with me in the studio Chas Licciardello, one of the co-hosts of Planet America and a member of the Chaser comedy team. It's on 9 o'clock on Fridays on ABC TV. And Sarah James, who was a foreign correspondent for NBC News, now lives here in regional Victoria and has generously agreed to come in with Chas and take your calls. Some text messages. Can you ask this without bias? Has Trump done a good job? Asks Alexander Wong.
I think it depends which field you're talking about. I'd say that the...
Okay, economic.
Yeah, well, look, there's no doubt the economy is doing better now than it was 2 years ago. Democrats would argue that it's carried on along largely the same dynamic that existed before unemployment was going down, and it's continued to go down at the same rate. The economy has continued to grow at the same rate, as in it's increasing its growth at the same rate as it was increasing during 2016. But I would say it's very hard to argue that the tax cuts haven't made a positive difference to the economy.
I think that the tax cuts are something that Americans in general give the president high marks for. You will hear some economists who don't agree with that. But rank and file, I think most Americans are very happy with the tax cuts. It's an interesting day to mention that because it's tax day in the United States. Monday, April the 15th is tax day. I think he has, you know, the Make America Great Again slogan was something that really resonated in the United States for his base. And immigration, which we've spoken about briefly, that is something that both parties are going to have to come to terms with. It is an issue. I think there were 100,000 people who were at the border last month. You know, that's down from record highs, but it's certainly an increasing number. And these are migrants coming in from Central America. So, you know, there are areas like that where he's given higher marks. But the Democrats would say no way to any of this. They would say that he has not made America a better place. He's not made it a more civil place. That they and again, Supreme Court, this is a question of which is your team? Are you a Republican or are you a Democrat?
So it's more tribal than ever. Yes. Text messages. Elections do not equal democracy. They just don't. India is more democratic than Australia. Interesting. America, the best marketed third world country, says Matthew from Arthur's Seat. Well-armed, non-compulsory voting, huge wealth and poverty disparities. Andrew, the US may be robust, but it's not the most democratic. Voter suppression, gerrymandering, end of story, not a robust democracy. Full stop, says Tom in Camberwell. The greatest bastion of democracy, ha, says David in Frankston.
I didn't say the greatest, by the way.
They do everything to stop people from voting. Elections on Tuesdays, the working class have to go to work. Why doesn't Obama rerun? They'd vote him back in. Are you allowed to after you've been out for a while, like in Russia?
That's actually a really, really interesting point. The answer is no, you are not allowed. You get 8 years or you get 2 terms. There's a caveat.
But you can't sit out for a term or two and then come back.
The Constitution says 10 years in total.
Exactly. Okay. So, and that is both original and then also with a little change that came after Roosevelt did a few extra years. But what I was going to say is there's a really interesting Axios article from yesterday, I think, where it pointed out that in Ohio, they talked to some voters and said, you know, these were swing voters who had voted for Obama and then voted for Trump. And they said, who do you want to see in 2020? And they said, of the Democrats, Obama.
Not Michelle.
They wanted Barack Obama again. And that is really interesting because it's heartening for the Democrats. It means it is possible. And they talked about, you know, he always used to call himself no drama Obama.
Yep.
They want a little less drama. They want, you know, that's something that they're looking for, a different era.
Text messages. There are currently 17 investigations into Trump from his charitable foundation to his inauguration committee. That's what he's scared of the most, says Morty Mick. At least Fox News doesn't pretend to be balanced, unlike the Democrats' mouthpiece CNN. I thought that was going to be the ABC. America should have a DFAT warning. So many people are killed every year. And Trump graffiti is now all over the world, which is an interesting point.
I just want to pick up on something that's been mentioned a few times now about Tuesday elections in America, where people are saying the reason they do that is to stop working people voting. I've heard twice now people have said that on the text line. That's not the reason they do that. The reason they do that is because the reason they have Tuesday elections is because way back when they started 200 years ago, that's how long it took farmers to get into the city to vote. It took 3 days to get into the city.
But they could change it tomorrow if they
wanted to. They could change it tomorrow.
They won't because it works in their favor.
Exactly. The reason they won't change it is because it works in their favor.
But a lot of states now, I mean, this is really important. You've got the opportunity to mail in votes. They've changed things and that will continue to change. But, you know, I take the point. I tell you, though, you should talk to Americans. They don't like the idea of compulsory voting at all. They don't want to be forced to do it. So it's a different
cultural. We haven't even
talked
about guns. Text message saying at least they don't have some old lady on the other side of the world as their head of state. Mick in Gippsland. Morning to you, Mick. Welcome to our forum.
G'day, fellas. Two things first. What would happen if, I think, Ruth RBG, what,
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
If she dies, how will that change?
Well, Trump will hear another nominee on the U.S. Supreme Court.
You will hear the sobbing and rending of garments from here among Democrats in the United States. They're really, really concerned about that.
But it will cement a majority for the conservatives on the Supreme Court.
It would, and it would actually make a huge, huge difference because people say, well, the conservatives already have 5-4 majority, but it'd make a big difference because at the moment, John Roberts, who is the Chief Justice, is acting as a bit of a swinging judge. Even though he himself is conservative, he's worried about the Supreme Court seeming too partisan. So he's actually balancing them out a bit. If it becomes 6-3, then it's going to be a very, very conservative Supreme Court and there'll be some huge changes.
But it's likely to happen. So, Mick, what's your concern?
No, well, that's sort of, you know, whatever happens, she's an elderly lady and, you know, that's... But I'm just interested in what the you guys thought about what could happen in the future, because there's whole laws like, you know, the abortion laws, all sorts of things that they want to try and change. But what my other question is we often hear the Trump administration and Trump himself being, you know, lambasted and whatnot for having a wall, wanting to build a wall. Yeah, but we have a wall here at the moment. It's a naval wall, yeah? And that keeps the people we don't want out. And we don't say anything about that, but we constantly go on about Trump and him wanting to build a wall and lambasting him and saying, oh, you know, I don't think I'm an American, so I can't say whether they should build a wall or not. Like the previous lady said, you know, 100,000 people, you know, there's 1,000 people a day turning up at some places.
It's interesting you say that, because this is actually won't go into detail with immigration, because we'll probably talk about it later, but this is something I always say. Australians are in no position to criticise Americans' attitude on illegal immigration, because they are way less extreme about it than we are.
Even in fact, Australia is used as an example in Europe now, as well as in the US, of a country taking control of its borders.
Absolutely. I was going to say, one of the big issues that Trump faces at the moment, it's a huge issue for him, one of the major problems he has is that he can't keep people in detention, because you're not allowed to keep children in detention in America for longer than 20 days. Now, imagine that in Australia.
But
you're
the splitting up of children from their parents was a low point.
But the horrific scene.
The reason that was a low point in his presidency, and he was tone deaf and didn't react quickly.
That's fine, but let's just remember why he was splitting up children from their family. It was because he was trying to keep the parents in detention, and he wasn't allowed to keep the children in detention with the parents. In Australia, they'd all be in detention for 3 years, 4 years.
But as you know, this has had a recent evolution, John, and a very interesting iteration, which is that last week there was a report in the Washington Post that President Bush wanted to penalize Democrats in big cities that are known as sanctuary cities. These are cities where the local authorities don't cooperate very well with federal authorities to protect undocumented migrants or immigrants in their communities. So there was going to be an effort to punish these cities by taking undocumented immigrants from the border and, if you will, dumping them in these cities. And then the White House pushed back and said, no, that we talked about it, but no, it's not going to happen. And then the president on Friday said, oh, yes, we are. We are going to do that. And now you have this situation in the United States where they are talking about it is being discussed as a possible strategy to take people from the border and somehow get them to these big cities elsewhere in the United States and basically put the problem on them. That's another huge issue. It continues to roll on.
Very good point made that they vote midweek in the UK and in lots of other countries as well. It's not something unique to the United States. Matthew in Echuca. Good morning, Matthew.
Hi. My question is, do you think perhaps if Trump was softer with his words, his actions wouldn't be so unfavourable?
What you mean if he was less belligerent?
Yeah. If he was a little more careful with how he said things, do you think his actions wouldn't be looked?
I don't think he'd be anywhere near as effective with his base. What do you think, Chaz?
Look, I think his base do like that he smashes the libs, so to speak. they like that he's so partisan. But having said that, one of the interesting things about Donald Trump, and people find this hard to believe, is that he's actually much less conservative in his policies than many of the people who have come before him. A lot of his policies 10 years ago were considered Democrat policies. Like, for instance, he's a much more big government person than a lot of Republicans would like him to be. But he doesn't seem that way because he's always smashing liberals on Twitter. So I think he would be less effective with his base, like John said, but I think he would be much more popular with Democrats if he wasn't trying to destroy them all the time.
Well, and I think certainly that it's impossible to rule out what he says, both on Twitter and using the bully pulpit of the presidency. I think that is part and parcel of this presidency, and it is impossible, frankly, to disconnect his actions from his words. I would give you most recently the situation that is occurring with Ilhan Omar, who is a representative from Minnesota. There's been a big debate over comments that she made to a Muslim group. This was following on from what happened in Christchurch with the massacre there, and she was talking about her concerns about anti-Muslim sentiment in a speech to a Muslim group, she talked about 9/11 and she used these words, some people did some things, which really that, as you can imagine, blew up in the United States because that was a terrorist attack and the worst one on U.S. soil. But the president then flipped around and posted on Twitter images of 9/11 with her comments. And Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, is now saying that there have been increased death threats against this freshman
representative. And asking him to withdraw.
My point that I'm making in this as we discuss that is words can have consequences. Sure. And I think we just – you can't with any – I'm not just singling out President Trump. I don't think with any leader in the modern era you can separate those things. They're both important.
Matthew, thank you. Text messages, we need a wall around Melbourne to keep the city people out of the rest of Victoria. Gary in Sunshine says, what's happening in America is standard fascist politics caused by inequality. And history shows that when forced, the 1% always choose fascism over any kind of socialism, says Gary of Sunshine. Stephen Carlton says, you deserve the politicians you get. It's so true. Unfortunately, the rest of the world, though, doesn't deserve Donald Trump. And there are a few people saying, come on, you have to cut him some slack. He's changed America and some of it for the better. Nigel in Cheltenham, good morning to you and welcome to our forum.
Oh, good morning to everybody there. My question is, what is the likelihood of Trump once again claiming in 2020 that the election was rigged and causing the launch of violence in the US society?
I would say the chance, if he loses, of declaring it's rigged is 100%. I think that's pretty obvious. In terms of causing violence, I don't know. I don't know about that.
I'm not willing to go there, but yeah. I would say that this is a guy who really likes being president and who is going, as I said before, I think he's going to be a feature in terms of the conversation. I really do think that's going to continue. But one other thing that we talked about, one of the callers actually raised this, are the ongoing investigations. And I just think we haven't mentioned that yet, John, and that's super important. We're going to get the redacted version of the lengthy Mueller report that's coming out, we're told, on Thursday. Now, this was a 400...
This redacted word is an interesting one. So
yeah, redacted.
We don't know how much of the information in it will be blacked out.
No. So it's going to be, it's color-coded, I'm told, and in sections, you know, but it's a 400-page report, and we've only seen the 4-page summary from the Attorney General.
Who is himself part of the Trump camp.
Well,
so the concern now expressed by eminent jurists in the US is that we want to see the full report without any removed bits to see if the 4-page summary, first of all, was genuinely an accurate summary. And also if there's bits in the 400 pages that cast fresh light on the investigation.
Well, one of the things we're not going to see, that we've been told we're not going to see, is information that links to current investigations. And there are ongoing investigations in a lot of different directions from the Southern District of New York, from the Eastern District of Virginia, and in Washington, D.C. So this thing isn't over.
Matters to do with Mueller and the Russian interference. But claims against other individuals that have not yet come before the courts.
And that's another thing we're not going to see. We're told by the Attorney General that people who were, if you will, drawn into the net, I mean, we're talking, hundreds and hundreds of subpoenas and witnesses that came before the grand jury. So in that kind of massive trawl of information, there are doubtless some people who really weren't themselves the key people that the Mueller investigation was looking at. Those other names, they're going to be kept out. Some of the grand jury stuff is going to be kept out. But make no mistake, the Democrats are going to be looking to see if there's anything that might embarrass this president.
So to cut to the chase, the concern is that when you're removing material on the basis that this can't be made public because it impacts other investigations, the concern from the Democrats, Chaz, is that in fact they'll also remove material prejudicial to President Trump.
Yes, and especially because Bill Barr, the Attorney General, has done this before. Back in 1989, he was Attorney General, and there was a legal opinion that was handed down OLC will mean nothing to the people here, but these are basically the legal advisors to the president. They handed down a legal
Office
opinion.
Of Legal Counsel.
Very good. Yeah. They handed down a legal opinion.
We've all watched West Wing.
Yes. And Bill Barr handed out a 13-page summary, similar to his 4-page summary. And he said, I can't release the rest because it's private. And in about 4 years later, the Democrats, when Bill Clinton was president, released it, and it turned out he'd hidden a whole bunch of stuff. So he has form, and so that's why Democrats are worried. But just to be very clear.
He's gaming the release of the Mueller report. That's the allegation.
That is the allegation. Now, just to be very clear, the people are not supposed to see the full report. No. The law is very explicit on that. The question is, will Congress see the full report? And in particular, will the head of the Intelligence Committee see the whole report?
That's the question. This cuts to the chase of exactly where American politics is, which is exactly where Australian politics is. Nobody trusts anybody anymore.
Yes.
And what used to be accepted conventions, even rules and processes and procedures, have been so trashed in recent years that no one trusts anyone anymore.
I think that's a really big worry. I think that democracies, we were talking earlier about democracies, and I continue to maintain, I think the United States is a robust democracy. But if you ask if I have any concerns, of course I do. I have concerns for democracies all over this world. Democracy is not an easy system.
No.
It works better for the people than others. I certainly would take it. But the reality is we have got to put people into positions. We've got to trust institutions. We've got to create robust institutions that last. And it is incumbent upon all of us to be part of that. And if we're constantly bickering and fighting, it doesn't work as well as it needs to.
No, let's get to more callers. How did the Simpsons know he would be president is the most important thing.
That is the most important.
And today, TDS is on display at the ABC. TDS.
So that's Trump derangement syndrome.
Correct. Yeah. Liz in Ballarat. Good morning to you, Liz.
Good morning, John. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted your thoughts because I'm more worried about, say, if Trump loses in 2020, Democrats get in, but then the Republican base then put up a candidate for 2024 who's like a smarter, more competent version of Trump. I was just wondering what your thoughts of that were.
Well, it's a long way away, isn't it, Liz?
It's scary, though.
I think that the chances of that are quite high. I think that Trumpism has changed the Republicans somewhat, and that they
remembering that, how much the Republican establishment tried to stop Donald Trump being the Republican nominee.
Absolutely, and I think that I described earlier the process that when someone loses, they become hated. So it's possible they might just move well away from him if he loses. But there's every chance that there are people positioning right now. Not only his own son, but there's a Senator Tom Cotton who I'm fully expecting to be running for president in 2024 if Trump loses.
Won't Cruz run again?
He might, but I don't think he'd succeed. But if Tom Cotton runs, he is basically just exactly what you just described, a smarter, more competent version of Trump. So we'll see.
Well, I think if we know anything about the United States and if you're a student of U.S. history, then you know that parties have always changed in the United States. And we have parties that are defunct. We had Whigs. We had Free Soilers. We had the silver issue. I mean, if you go back, that's the way it works. And I think what happened while everybody was watching the space was that the Republican Party changed. This isn't the party that it was. I spoke to a couple of weeks ago, I spoke to a guy who's really been a lifelong Republican, and he said he watched what he regarded as kind of the fiscal conservative but a little bit more socially liberal policies that he really supported as a Republican be chipped away, so that he finally in 2016 voted for a Libertarian candidate. He couldn't all the way go over to the Democrat, but he will in 2016, but he will in 2020. So the Republican Party is a different party from what it was before because of Trump.
I should just say, though, that this is constant. Every 4 years, you can never predict what's going to happen in 4 years' time.
You certainly can't. Good on you, Liz, and thank you for your call. Colin's in the city and waiting patiently. Morning, Colin.
Good morning, John. Good morning to your listeners. I'd just like to make an observation about America. I think the Democrats need to be very, very careful. I think they're playing the man more than the game. And, we had that saying here in Australian football, play the game, not the man. And I think that they're losing sight, and they may well lose the next election because of that. I was listening to people commenting on the Mueller report, and a lot of them said, oh, I'm so disappointed. It didn't give us the result we wanted. And whether it was the truth or not, they wanted a certain result. And I think the Democrats need to be very, very careful. They could easily lose the next election.
They could easily lose that next election. And I think what they need to watch out for is who won and who lost in 2018. So in the midterm elections, the candidates who won didn't play the man. They played the game, and they played the local issues and the state issues, and they looked at their electorate and they said, what do my local, you know, what do local folks want? And those were the candidates that won. And the ones who completely played the Trump, you know, the kind of, oh, scary, it's all about the president, they didn't
got
as well.
Got sucked into fighting on his turf.
Exactly. And I think he is a very, you cannot get away from the fact that he's a very skilled political operator. He has. He's got lots of media experience. He's a savvy politician. We've had savvy politicians before in the United States. But they, you're right, they have to find their own issues and not simply react.
Patrick in Pasco Vale. Morning to you, Patrick.
Good morning, John. In Australian politics, there's a truism that opposition don't get voted in, governments get turfed out, you know, for a multitude of reasons, primarily because they don't deliver or fulfil what they were supposed to have done. Could that have applied a little bit in the United States election when Trump got in? Because it seemed like the public were just sick and tired of the Republicans and Democrats not delivering on, you know, what the people wanted, and they just went for someone from way out of left field.
Yeah, Chaz, is that a fair explanation?
Absolutely. I think that that is a fixture in American politics. There's a reason why almost, if you look through history, apart from George Bush in 1998, it's very rarely three terms in a row of any particular party. People, voters get sick of a party very rapidly, and two terms is usually enough. And I think that when you're in government, like the Democrats were for 8 years, people blame you for everything in government. So if you are feeling ignored by the elite, then that's the Democrats' fault. If you whatever your grievance, that's the Democrats' fault. And it's going to work the same way for the Republicans if Trump gets the two terms as well. I think you do kick the bums out. That happens a lot.
Yeah, throw the bums out is the American expression for sure. And the one thing I would say that gives – the Democrats have got a tough road ahead for them if they want to win in 2020. We've spoken about that. I think what gives them a sense that it might be possible, that it might be doable, is that if you go in – if you drill down into some of the polling in some of the local areas which switched – to Trump and carried the victory for him, particularly in the Midwest. Some of those areas have not seen the economic uptick that they hoped and expected to see with this president. And they are ripe for picking and switching back the other way as long as they have a candidate who speaks to the issues that they care about. And if you want to know, number one, and I really think this is true everywhere, it's always going to come back to the economy. It's always
jobs
going to come back
in the economy,
of course,
every time, unless there's a national security threat, which is the other issue. Chaz, in 1 minute, prediction
in the election.
Yep,
I think that it will be Kamala Harris will be the nominee, and I think that she will narrowly beat Trump in an extremely ugly election in 2020.
I am not going to predict who the nominee is going to be because we just had this conversation about the, you know, all of us smart people being wrong. And I think it's too early. I'm not saying that because of the show. I think having the chutzpah to guess who's going to be the presidential nominee this far out.
Chaz accused
good luck,
of chutzpah?
Chaz.
Yeah, I'm an idiot.
That's his middle name.
I openly admit
it's a
you're
stupid
crazy.
Thing to do.
It was really nuts.
I'm a glutton for punishment.
It's all right, you know, but it's not going to, you know,
I'll
no
make
way.
A prediction.
What's yours?
American politics will never be the same again. It will not go back to how it used to be. This is not just an interruption to normal business. This is a seismic shift. This is something that will never, it will not be reversed.
I agree.
People may get their revenge if the Republicans are voted out, but American politics has changed forever and the knock-on effect will be felt forever around the world.
Here's my prediction. We're going to have higher numbers of people getting out to vote. We're going to have greater engagement. We're going to have CNN, NBC, I had to get my old mob in there, MSNBC, all the networks. It's going to be must-see TV to watch the debates, to care about what's happening. That's good for democracy. We need to have it happen. That's my prediction.
And the Russians and the Chinese will both try to influence the next presidential campaign more than the last one. That's my other prediction. Chaz, Sarah, it's been absolutely wonderful. Chaz Licciardello is co-host of Planet America on Fridays nights on ABC TV. Sarah James, former foreign correspondent for NBC News, now living happily in regional Victoria, have both been generous in giving us their time and a special forum from time to time lets us dig deep. Chaz, Sarah, thank you for all of your calls and all your texts as well. This has been The Conversation Hour.
On ABC Radio, this is The Conversation Hour.